I want to speak about the first Rashi in Chumash for today. I just want to speak about the first half, and maybe we'll continue and speak about the second half next time. I will not be here next Thursday, though. I'll be in the States for a week. So just one Thursday, we'll continue in 2 weeks. In any case, for today, we can just understand the first part of Rashi. The Rashi says the following. Omer Yitzchak said, Lohoya HaTorah LaHaskel Elamei HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem. The Torah should not have started except from the Pasuk HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem in Parshas Bo, Shehi Mitzvah Rishonah Shenitzdavu Bo Yisrael. That is the first mitzvah that the Jewish people were given as a people. Matam Pasuk B'Bereishis. Why talk of the Torah start with B'Bereishis? Should have started with the first mitzvah. First of all, there are mitzvahs before HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem, but they are not mitzvahs that were given to the Jewish people as a people. Avraham Avinu got a mitzvah of Mila, and the Yaakov Avinu Gid Hanasha, and so on, but the main, what's it called, mitzvahs that were given to the Jewish people as a people started before the Exodus from Egypt, and the first one was Kiddush HaKodesh, was sanctifying the new moon. That mitzvah was given, first mitzvah that was given to the Jewish people as a people. Yeah.
How is Gid Hanasha not a mitzvah for everybody?
It is, but it wasn't given then. It was something that the sons of Yaakov did, but it didn't become binding on the Jewish people, the Rambam says, until Mount Torah, until Sinai. So the Torah just says, that's why, after the fact, after, what's it called, the Torah was given, the Torah prohibited Gid Hanasha. Okay, but not that at the time that it happened, that's when it became a mitzvah for everybody to do.
Yeah. About bris, the same thing.
Right, it was for Avraham Avinu's family or whatever, but it became a mitzvah with all the, in fact it wasn't even the same mitzvah. Until after Mount Torah, the bris only had the first part, the cutting off of the orla, not the priya, the uncovering of the, it was a different kind of mitzvah before Mount Torah. Okay, in any case, my question is a more fundamental question. You're asking questions that are more sophisticated. Well, it's a very simple question. After the first mitzvah is introduced, is the Torah then just a list of mitzvahs, one after the other? Or are there other things in the Torah after that? Right, after Parshas Bo, that's it? Just mitzvahs from then on? Anything else in the Torah besides mitzvahs?
Kazis.
No, what?
Kazis.
Did it?
Kazis.
Okay. Story. And how about other things? Stories?
Yes.
Yeah, how about the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim? Okay, history, right? The historical things, accounting, the numbers, counting the Jewish people also there. So the Torah is not just the book of mitzvahs. That's the Sefer HaMitzvahs of the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch, they're books of mitzvahs. The Torah has many things in it. It has mitzvahs, it has stories. Stories not implying that they're not true. There's true stories too. Narratives, let's call it that. There's plenty of things in the Torah, right? It's a conglomeration of many things. So why is it so simple to Rashi, or to Rabbi Yitzchak, it's a medrash. Rabbi Yitzchak is a, some people thought this medrash was not, what's it called, known, until very, pretty recently we discovered, uncovered this medrash, the medrash Tanhuma, but a, what's it called, a different version of the Tanhuma than we were used to. And till then, there was no medrash that said Omer of Yitzchak. So some people said, they conjecture that Omer of Yitzchak is Rashi's father. Shlomo ben Yitzchak was Rashi. Shlomo Yitzchaki Rashi. Rabbeinu Shlomo Yitzchaki Rashi. And they said that Rashi's father wasn't a big Talmud Chacham, but Rashi wanted to honor him by starting his commentary on the Chumash with something from his father. So he said to his father, ask me a question. So his father said, hey, why does the Torah start from Bereishis? So he put, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, and he embellished the question a little bit. That's ridiculous. First of all, Rashi's father was a big Talmud Chacham. He quotes him a few times in the Gemara as to how he learned the version of the Gemara from his father. His father was not an Amoharis. His father was a big Talmud Chacham, Rashi's father. And we know that this is a Medrash. Rabbi Yitzchak is a Medrash. It's Rabbi Yitzchak, the Tana, Rabbi Yitzchak, the Amora, Rabbi Yitzchak. So, what was it so clear to Rabbi Yitzchak that the Torah should have started from the first mitzvah If a Torah has stories in it too, it makes sense to me, start with the first story. I mean, I can't think of anybody who starts with Bereishis. It's not pretty logical. If the Torah had been just a bunch of mitzvahs, start from mitzvahs. But it's not just mitzvahs. So start from the first story. What's the question? So let me tell you what I think the question is. Let's start with the Rambam. The Rambam says that the details of how Mashiach is going to come are not ever going to be known until it happens. There was never a Mesorah given to the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im had no clear prophecies concerning these details. They had prophecies about Mashiach. But the details, how exactly it's going to come, chronologically, is Eliyahu going to come before Mashiach, after Mashiach? If, Mashiach's donkey is going to be black or gray or white, all those details, no one will know until it happens, because God did not reveal it to the prophets, and even the Chachamim, who are greater than prophets, have no tradition when it comes to these details. Therefore, says the Rambam, one should not make this the mainstay of his learning. Now, if the Rambam had just said those two facts, would they make sense? One is a cause and one is an effect?
Yeah.
Since these things are not clear anyway, this is not what you should spend most of your time learning. Because obviously, God didn't intend you to spend most of your time learning it, otherwise he would have made it more clear. So he didn't tell the prophets these details, and he didn't give the Chachamim a tradition in these details. So this is obviously not the main thing to learn. Then the Rambam adds one more sentence. She'ein ha'dvorim ho'elu magiyim esha'odam lo lidei avas Hashem v'lo lidei yiras Hashem. These things do not bring a person not to love of God or fear of God. So what? What does that add? Why do I need that last sentence? It already makes sense. Since these things are not clear, can never be clear, this is not what you spend most of your time learning. Even if these things will bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem. But there are a lot of other things in the Torah that also will bring you to love and fear of God, and they're clear. And there's a Masorah for them. So it's better to learn those things. What does the Rambam need to add this for? What does it add? Even if these things would bring to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem, you still shouldn't make it the mainstay of your learning because they're not clear. Why does the Rambam have to add that they don't bring you to Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? Huh? The Rambam says Hilchos Malachim, Perek Yud Aleph, Hilchos Malachim. So, Perek Yud Beis, Hilchos Malachim. So what I think the Rambam means is the following. The Rambam with this last sentence is answering an unasked question. And that is the following. Okay, God didn't reveal these things to the prophets. He didn't reveal them to the sages. And therefore you shouldn't make it the mainstay of your learning. But why didn't he reveal it to the prophets and to the sages? Why didn't God put these details in the Torah Shebichtav through the prophets, the written Torah, or the Torah Shebaal Peh through the rabbis? Why did he leave it obscure? Why didn't he say what it's all about? Why didn't he put the details? Wouldn't it be interesting to know if Mashiach's donkey is going to be gray, white, or black? Why didn't God make these things clear? Why didn't he put them in the Torah? Not the written or the oral Torah. The Rambam says, you know why not? Because Ein ha'dvorim ho'elu magiyim esha'adam lo lidei avas Hashem lo lidei yiras Hashem. Because these things don't do what Torah is supposed to do. They don't bring you to love or fear of God. Torah is not information. There is nothing in the Torah that's there just merely as information. So you can answer on a trivia quiz, if Mashiach's donkey is going to be black or gray. If it's in the Torah, it serves one purpose, to make you a better Jew, to make you a better person, to bring you closer to God, love and fear. If it doesn't accomplish that, it's not in the Torah. If it doesn't accomplish it for you, there's something wrong with you. You didn't learn it well enough. But that is the purpose of what Torah is. Torah is there to make you a bigger Ohev Hashem or a Yirei Shamayim. And if it doesn't fulfill that, it's not in the Torah. And if it's in the Torah, somehow it will fulfill that, if you learn it properly. And therefore, the details, the fact that there'll be Mashiach or whatever, the generalities, that will bring a person, make him a bigger Yirei Shamayim, looking towards the perfection of the world, what the goal of the world is. But if Mashiach's donkey is going to be black, gray, or white, will not affect your being a greater Yirei Shamayim or a greater Ohev Hashem, it's not in the Torah, not in the written Torah, not in the oral Torah. Let me tell you something that Rabbi Cheskel Avramsky, a rabbi in England, and he came here to Eretz Yisrael. Big gadol, big tzaddik. He explained the following pasuk in Megillas Esther. The second to the last pasuk in Megillas Esther says the following: the choma se sakpo ukvurasa uparashas gedulas Mordechai halohem ksuvi v'asefer divrei hayom in l'malchei monei uparas. The greatness and the deeds of Mordechai HaYehudi are found in the history books of the kings of Magai and Parparas, Persia. So he asked, what's the purpose of this Marimakom, right, this footnote to Megillas Esther? It's like, for further information, if you like the story here and you want further information about Mordechai, why don't you check the history books of Persia and Magai? I mean, did anybody ever look in those history books? They weren't even available. They weren't the library books. They were the king's library. Anybody ever knock on the door of a king of Persian Magai and said, you see, it says in my Megillah footnote that I should check out more stories about Mordechai in your books. Can you owe me one? Slam the door in your face. What was the purpose of it? Says Chetzel Avramsky, the Megillah is making the following point. If you're interested in the history of this period of Persia and the deeds of Mordechai as history, don't look here. You can look in the books, the history books of Persian Mordechai. This is not history. This is Torah. And Torah means Horah. It shows you. It guides you. It's there to bring you to Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem. As a history book, Megillas Esther is a really miserable history book. Because it has an episode from this year of Ahasuerus' reign, and then 3 years later, and then 4 years after that, and then 5 years after that. It leaves out so many significant episodes in Persian history of that time. It focuses in on only those incidents, only those details that you need to really understand the miracle of Purim and to become inspired, impressed, influenced because of it. That's what it's all about. You won't find anything in here that is extraneous to that. Nothing extra. There's not one letter, not one word that doesn't serve the purpose of making you a better Jew because impressing you with the miracle that happened. And every detail that's there somehow fits into that. And if it doesn't, it's not there. And if it's there, then if you learn it properly, you'll see that it's necessary. Yeah.
Describes all the cloths and the colors and everything else that happens. 100%.
Every single thing there, if you learn it properly, you'll be able to understand why it was put there to help you really understand what the next was. If you learn Megillas Esther with the Perushim, you'll find that even every single one of those details was necessary. In fact, the rabbi explained the pasuk in Tarshish Vayelech, Ki lo dovar reku miken. Chazal say, the Torah is not something empty from you. And if it looks empty, miken, it's your fault. You don't know, learn it well enough. If it looks like there's no purpose in it, looks like there's nothing there, just stop. Information say, it's mikem, because you didn't learn it properly. There is nothing in the Torah that's there just for information's sake. And in fact, that was the sin of Menashe, Hamelech. It says Menashe lost his share in the world to come because he was megalat plumim batorah shelo kaloch. Simple meaning is that he dealt with the Torah in an extremely chutzpahdik way, in a very, very not honorable, dishonorable way. He was a very, very fresh, what's the word we're looking for? What's the word we're looking for? Chutzpah? Disrespectful, yeah. But it's more than disrespectful. It's chutzpah, you know, chutzpah.
Arrogant.
Arrogant. Well, or?
Disdain
of Torah. Okay. What did he do? He was Doresh Drosha Shaldofi. He made up drushes that were foolish drushes. An example the Gemara gives, he said, didn't Moshe Rabbeinu have anything better to write than Timna Haisa Pilegesh Lalifas Ben Esav? Timna was a concubine to Esav's son Eliphaz. Who in the world cares? That's what I have to know. I have to sit there and read who Timna was, and she was a concubine. Doesn't say, though, what his drasha was. I mean, the whole problem is you make foolish drasha. It says what his question was. What was his answer? I tell you, that was exactly what he said. What he said was that the only reason that's written in the Torah is for information's sake. There is no other purpose for it. And that's Drosh HaShtodovi. That's called Megala Ponim Batorah Shalok Halacha, meaning the following. There are many ponim to the Torah, many faces, many facets to the Torah. But they're all halacha. They all teach you something. They all guide you. They all bring you either to love of God or fear of God. But he uncovered facets of the Torah, Shalok Halacha, that were not Halacha. They didn't bring you to anything. They just were there for information. That's the biggest chutzpah against the Torah, to say that the Torah is merely a book for information. It's not a divine guide for life. There's even one word in it that's not a divine guide for life. That's the greatest chutzpah against the Torah. And that's called Megalaponim. You are uncovering facets, Shalok Halacha, that have nothing to do with Halacha. That have nothing to do with guidance and bringing a person closer to God. If that's what Torah is, then it's just a plain book. So let me prove it to you from another place. Our Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says the following: "V'asara mamaros nivra ha'olam." The world was created with 10 utterances. They call kach lama. How come so many? V'halo b'maymer echad yochli boros. God could have created the world with one mind. Ela, to teach you how important the world is, so that wicked people who destroy the world are destroying a world that took 10 mamoras to create, and righteous people who preserve the world are preserving a world that was created with 10 mamoras, not just one. God put a lot of time and thought into this world. So it's worth preserving, and it's a terrible sin to destroy it. Now, I don't understand the question in the Mishnah. Mishnah said, God created the world with 10 mamoras. How come so many? He could have done it with one. How do you know he could have done it with one? Did the Tana ever create worlds that he knew he could do with one? Maybe you need 10. Not that God can't do anything, but when it comes to creating worlds, this is the way you create a world. It's like asking, how come God created hands with 5 fingers on them? He couldn't create with 1 finger or 20 fingers? Yeah, sure he could have, but that's what you have. That's a hand, 5 fingers. That makes it functional. Yeah, he could have done it differently, but he wouldn't want to do it differently. He wanted to do it like this. So if God created the world and he knows you need 10 mamaras, maybe you need 10. Maybe you can't create a world with one. How does the Tana ask so categorically, and why so many? God could have done it with one. If you look at the Ovestra of Nasa, which is the brises that sometimes explain the Mishnah a lot more clearly, that's what we learn Gemara, you bring a brisa as a explanation of the Mishnah. There it says the following. It says, Basora mamoros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 utterances. Why do people have to know that? Why do created beings have to know that? Meaning the question is not on God. The question is, why include that in the Torah? Why do I have to know that God created the world with 10 mamoras? I'm going to, so like a do-it-yourself kid, next time you create a world, do it with 10 mamoras. So now I know how many mamoras to create a world with. I'm not going to create worlds. I'm boil. I came into a created world. I don't need to create worlds. Why do I have to know that God created the world with 10 mamoras? What does it do for me? And that's what our Mishnah means. It doesn't say, God could have created it with 10. For all I care, it could have been one. That's the idea. What do I care how many mamoras needed to create the world? For all I care, it could have been one. Not for God's sake, it could have been one. I don't need to know that. For all I care, it could have been one mimer. What do I have to know there was 10? And that it says, because it makes a difference to me. If I know that God created the world individually, everything was brought into existence individually, then the world has individual importance. Every individual thing is important, and it makes the world a much more important place for me to preserve and not to destroy. It brings me to love of God, fear of God. But from the question, you see this idea. Wouldn't it have been interesting to tell me how many mamaras did God create the world? In case I'm asked on a trivia, quiz. How many mamaras did God create the world? I know it's 10. Right? So it's not interesting information-wise, scientifically? Yeah, but not in the Torah. It'll be in a science book, in a history book, not in the Torah. If it's in the Torah, it has to have something to do with me, my life, my coming closer to God. And if it doesn't have that, it's not in the Torah. Same thing the next Mishnah is in Pirkei Avos. Asara doros me Adam v'Noach. Asara doros me Noach and Avram. The Torah gives two lists of 10 generations between Adam and Noach in last week's Sedra, between Noach and Avram in this week's Sedra. And you know what the Avos Rav Nosson asks on that? Who cares? Why do I need to know there were 10 generations from Adam to Noah? It's nice historical information. Put it in the history book. Why do I need to know that from the Torah? That's the question. And the answer is, because it teaches me a lesson. The 10 generations between Adam and Noah taught me that these people were wicked people. They really deserved to be destroyed. And God had patience with them and didn't destroy them until 10 generations. So the Rabbeinu Yonah says we learn two things from that. We learn that God is patient. We also learn that his patience runs out. And that he's not patient forever. That after 10 generations, he destroyed them. So I learned love of God and how patient he is for 10 generations. And I love fear of God that after 10 generations, he destroyed them. And the second 10 generations, a different lesson. That it's possible that people can live, not fulfill their purpose, and one person can come along and fulfill the purpose of everybody else and get the reward for all of them. That's the reason that the Torah had mentioned the second 10 generations. Now let me tell you something very interesting based on this. You would expect that the narrative of the Torah, of these two lists of 10 generations, would be parallel, would be exactly the same. Same God who wrote the Torah, same Torah. So the style should be one monolithic style. So whatever the Torah, however it presented the first 10 generations, that's exactly how it should present the second 10 generations. But it doesn't. The first 10 generations, the Torah presents each generation with three sentences. The main protagonist of that generation, the person who represented the generation, how long he lived till he had his main son. Like Vayechi, so many and so many years, Vayolad is Enosh. And he gave birth to Enosh. Then, Vayechi, second pasuk, Vayechi, Sheis, Acharei, Holidu, Es Enosh, so many and so many years, Vayolad, Bonim, Ubonis. Chet, Sheis lived after he gave birth to Enosh. So many and so many years, and he had other children. Vayechi, Sheis, so many and so many years, Vayomos. Three sentences. How old he was when he had his main child, how long he lived after that and had other children, how old he was, sum total when he died, and he died. That's the way the Torah presents the first 10 generations. How does it present the second 10 generations? Two sentences only. Vayechi Shein, so many and so many years, Vayolid is Arpachshad. Vayechi Shein, Acharei Olidus Arpachshad, so many and so many years, Vayolid Bani Mubanas. Finished with Shein, next generation. What does it leave out? How old he was, sum total, when he died, and then he died. It doesn't mention that those second 10 generations died at all, nor does it mention the sum total of their life. You can figure it out. Add the years he was when he had his main child, add the years he lived after that when he had his other children, and you'll figure out how old he was when he died. But it doesn't mention it in the Torah, as it does by the first 10 generations, and it doesn't even mention they died. Why? Why would the same Torah, same author, present the same thing in two different ways? And in fact, Bible critics start to say, well, he's not the same author. So what is the reason? So I'll tell you what I think. Since the Torah doesn't write one extra word or one extra letter that is not to teach you something, then what's ever necessary for that lesson, like the officer of Nelson says, why do I need to know that there were 10 generations in Adam and Noah or Noah and Abraham? Why do I need to know that in the Torah? What does that bring me, Adas Hashem and Yiras Hashem? The answer is it does. It teaches you a lesson. So in order to really know the lesson of the first 10 generations, which is God is patient, but up to a point, I have to know that there were a lot of people and that they died peacefully after 800-900 years in their dead. Because if it didn't tell me that clearly, I could have doubts. Maybe they lived a long time. Maybe they lived a long time and they were punished in terrible ways, right? They were swallowed up by volcanoes at the end of their life, right? They were tortured on the rack for the last month of their life. Who knows? But it says no, they lived 800-900 years, but you almost die a nice, natural death in bed after 800-900 years of life. That's clearly they weren't punished. So I learned from that, God is merciful. These wicked people lived for 10 generations and weren't punished until finally God brought the flood. But I need all that information to know how many there were. They had children. They lived long lives. They died peacefully in their bed. How about the second lesson? A lot of people have lived. They didn't fulfill their purpose. And Avraham Avinu was able to get the reward for all of them. Do I have to know those people lived? Yes. Do I have to know there were a lot of them? Yes. Do I have to know they died? No. It has nothing to do with the lesson. Therefore, it totally leaves it out. Wouldn't it be interesting to know if these people died and how old they were? Yeah, it'd be very interesting. Go look in the history book. Not here. Interesting things alone don't exist in the Torah. It has to be interesting because it has a horah, it has a lesson. If it doesn't serve that purpose, there's not an extra letter that's there just for information's sake. That's what Torah is. In fact, the Torah has a lot of things in it. Mitzvahs, chukim, mishpatim. When a Torah lists the whole list and says Torah, what's Torah? Which part of the Torah is referred to as Torah specifically? Says the Ramban, the story part of Torah. It doesn't seem to make any sense. Because Torah means horah, it means to teach and to guide. That's exactly the point. The main teaching and guidance is in the stories. It's not there just to tell you a nice story. It's teach you and guide you and bring you closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And therefore the Zohar says that the whole Torah is mitzvahs. So some mitzvahs are clothed in obvious, and some are clothed in stories. And therefore the question is no question that we started with. The Torah is a combination of stories and mitzvahs. Why shouldn't you start with the first story? The Torah is not a combination of stories and mitzvahs. The Torah is only mitzvahs, except some mitzvahs are presented openly, and some are clothed in stories. So everything in the Torah is there to teach you and guide you, and nothing more or less than that. If that's the case, where's the most logical place to start? With the first obvious mitzvah. Why? Because when you write a book, one of the rules of creative writing is that in the first few paragraphs, you set the tone and the theme of the book. That whoever reads it will know within the first two, three paragraphs what this book is all about. Is it a novel? Is it history? Is it science? What is it? Therefore, logically, the Torah should have started with the first obvious public mitzvah, and that sets the pattern. Now, if there's a story after that, I know the story has to be understood in light of mitzvahs. But to start with a story could be misleading, because I don't know yet what this book is all about. I might think it's not a story. So in order to avoid that, the Torah should have started with the first mitzvah and then put the story, so it puts it into context. So why did it start with the first story? Why did it start with Bereishis? That's for the next question.